Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Well, thank you, Dan. Man, it's great to be with my good friend and colleague and brother, Mark Halleck.
What's up?
I'll tell you what, man, we are here in Alpharetta, Georgia, at the North American Mission Board broadcast studio.
I love this studio.
It is. I'm just surprised they actually named it the Mark Clifton Studio, but, you know, I'll take it. It's okay.
Listen, you've put in enough time. They wanted to honor you somehow.
We are. Okay, hey, here's what we're going to talk about today. This may be a two-parter. You never know. Could be. Five signs that show you are an at-risk pastor. This is by an article by Jim Davis, and man, there are some good things in this article about how to know whether or not you are an at-risk pastor. It is not something that you want to be, Mr. Halleck.
Yeah.
Not at all. Give me the first one. What's the first sign that you might be an at-risk pastor?
Okay. Number one is this, the narcissistic star who rises quickly.
That's right. These are pastors who are extremely successful at their craft. I mean, these are guys that could probably, they could probably be the number one car salesman at CarMax. They could probably be Gold Diamond Jubilee in Amway, right? They just have it going on.
Yep.
There's something about their presence. They walk into a room and everybody looks at them.
Yep.
They say something, and everybody listens to them. They are able to communicate. They've always done that their whole life. In fact, maybe they've been able to sort of talk themselves out of situations, encourage people to do things they didn't want to do. Here's the problem with that. First of all, it can work really well for a while.
Yeah, for a while.
I mean, how many pastors wouldn't like to have that kind of that kind of persona, right?
Right.
I walk in, everybody listens to me.
Yep.
I say something, everybody agrees with it. You know, I have this leadership, this innate leadership, but the problem is he tends to think he's right all of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And tends to surround himself by yes men. You've had some experience with that in your life, working with pastors across North America. Unpack that for a little bit. What's that look like?
Well, I think here's the problem. It's like the plus side is these are what you might call our five-star guys, you know? These are our five-star church planters.
They
got it all.
They got the good haircut.
They got they're beautiful.
They can wear
smell good.
They can wear the cool jeans and the great sneakers.
The whole deal. They got it all. They got it all. The problem is if there isn't a humility that undergirds this individual, they can do a lot of damage, which is why we always say competency can never take precedence over character. Right. And so competency can blind us because we go, man, this guy is so gifted, so talented, so dynamic. What a speaker, man. We're going to grow our church with this guy. But the problem is, listen, man, if he doesn't have the character of a godly man, a man of integrity, a man who's humble, loves Jesus, loves the Bible, is quick to submit to others, then this guy can do a lot of damage. Mark Dever once said, he said, listen, if you've got this kind of personality, you've got to always be thinking about ways I can protect my congregation from me.
Yeah, you know, Spurgeon said that whatever your strength is in ministry, whatever your strongest point is, that will become your weakest point.
Wow.
Satan will use that. You'll depend on that more than on him.
For sure.
Here's how you might know if you're an at-risk pastor. If you are one of those guys that has always naturally been a leader, people look to you, things go rather quickly around you, but are you ready for this? If you really think you're always right, and this is a big one, if you believe anybody who pushes against you is an adversary, if everything is right, I'm right, they're wrong. If you don't agree with me, you're my enemy.
Yeah.
You're my adversary. You're against me. You know, you need to get off the bus.
Yep.
That's a warning sign, guys.
That's
right. It truly is.
That's right.
Okay, what's number two?
Number two is this. A little different than the first one. The first one's the narcissistic star who rises quickly. Number two is the narcissistic star who doesn't rise. This guy's even more dangerous, to be honest with you.
Imagine the same person. This is what our writer says. Imagine the same person, but without the gifts or opportunity to rise. In other words, he thinks he can do this.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
He thinks he should be able to do this, and he doesn't understand why people don't follow him.
Yeah.
And he becomes very upset with that. He feels victimized.
Mm.
Look, I want to be careful. I don't want to heap coals of fire on people's head. But I run into pastors all the time who play the victim card. Mm. Man, my church doesn't understand me. My community doesn't accept me. Yeah, yeah. I can't find any leaders. Nobody follows through. As though they should be actually given something special because they're a pastor. Look, I remember in the book of Revelation where John is on the island of Patmos thinking he'll never see Jesus again until he gets to heaven, right? Mm. And then he turns around one day, he hears a voice like a trumpet, and there stands in all of his glory, the resurrected Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, John took care of Jesus' mother. John was the disciple Jesus loved.
Yeah.
You would think John would just jump for joy, but what did John do? He fell at Jesus' feet and he said, what? I am dead.
Yeah.
I can't stand to be in the presence of a holy, holy resurrected Christ. I'm a sinful man. There wasn't anything in John could have said, you know, Jesus, glad you're here. I took care of your mom. I'm the last disciple. I've been preaching longer than anybody. There was no sense of entitlement in John.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing he felt he was entitled to was death. Pastor, I'm just going to be really blunt with you. If you feel like you're entitled to something, that's not the Holy Spirit putting that in your heart. That is not Jesus speaking to you. The only thing, I mean, I know we want people to treat us in a certain way. I know we want to be respected. I know we'd like people to always follow us, but they're not always going to do that.
Yeah.
And the narcissist who doesn't rise becomes bitter.
Yeah.
He's still focused on himself. He just doesn't have the gifts to get people to follow him. So he becomes bitter, and he becomes the victim in his church. And let me ask you, who wants to follow somebody like
that?
No,
that's right. That's exactly right.
And it seeps out in your conversations.
It does.
It seeps out in your preaching. You become negative and sarcastic and all of those terrible
things. It seeps out in how you're threatened by others.
Yeah, exactly.
You won't raise up other leaders.
Right.
And so, again, I would say this, man. If you see hints of this in yourself, if you're being honest and you see this, what I would say is begin to pray, Lord, help me to be content where I am with who I am in Christ. You know, those are the two big things. Because listen, this whole idea of rising of toward fame and a mega church and all this stuff, man, listen, that's not from the Lord. Like, if God calls you and gifts you, great. But you know what? For most of us, it's not what he's called us to. And so let's quit looking there as the win and seek to be faithful.
Yeah.
Here's number three.
Okay, what is it?
The no boundaries leader.
Yeah, those are pastors who do not like to hear no. And they don't like to tell others no.
They just
lack the ability to create just the needful boundaries that come when you have to work with people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's not as much, our writer tells us, he's not as much a threat as the first two, but an organization will be in real trouble through a lack of focus. Someone who basically just wants to please people.
Yep.
If you guys want to do this, Pastor, we would like to have this. Oh, great. You want to do that? Sure. You know, I'm not sure we should have this ministry. Well, I enjoy doing it. Okay, you can keep doing it. In other words, there's just no boundaries. Whatever people want to do, they can do. There's no sense of direction. There's no sense of focus. And you're trying, you think you're keeping people happy.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're really creating a mess.
Yeah.
And something that is not sustainable and something that eventually will come back to bite. None of us like to put boundaries. We don't like to say no to anybody about anything.
Mm.
But we have to. If you're going to have you know, we're here at the North American Mission Board for this week of meetings. And, you know, one of the things that our president, Kevin, is so good at is keeping us focused. In other words, everybody would like the North American Mission Board to do all kinds of things, and they would be good. But if we diversified too much, then we wouldn't be great at the things we're really supposed to be great at.
Yep.
And he's good at keeping boundaries. Even I'll talk to him and I'll say, man, I'd like to do this. And he'd go, Clifton, you got to stay in your lane, man.
You need that.
And I need that.
You need that. So do I. That's why he says all the time, what does he say? Stay in your lane.
Yes.
Stay in your
lane. And my elders, when I was at Warnell Road, they would remind me that, Clifton, you wake up in a new world every day. You know, you got a new idea every day. And you want to go in all these directions. And so God brings men around us to help us have these boundaries. But if you do not accept that, and you do not want to hear no, and you don't even want to tell other people no, then you're going to develop into some high-risk ventures that are not going to turn out well.
Yeah, it's not a healthy way to lead.
No.
Okay, number four. So let's review. Number one is the narcissistic star who rises quickly. Number two, the narcissistic star who doesn't rise. Number three, the no boundaries leader. And number four is the floater. What is the floater?
Well, this pastor has no accountability. In fact, he avoids accountability by making lateral moves to remain in a feedback-free environment.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not as harsh as the narcissist, but he's just as at risk because he naively thinks his ministry will flourish if people will just believe in him and just care for him. And he just kind of floats around. Again, this is from our writer. Jim Davis. He wrote some good stuff about this. And I agree. It's sort of like, I'm just going to go along to get along. I'm just going to try to make it as best as I can. Mm-hmm. And if this church doesn't work out, I'll just move to another church and stay there for a couple of years, and I'll move to another church. And I just float, you know?
Yep, I'm just float.
I'm just float, you know?
Yep.
And I'm sort of naive about it all.
Yeah.
I don't have any real strong opinions one way or another.
Yep.
I don't want strong accountability. And so if I feel like accountability is coming, I'll try to move someplace else.
Yep.
Where I won't
That's
have
exactly
it.
Right. Okay, listen. So we've hit these four things.
Yeah.
Now, here's the question that I want to move to, a practical thing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that Davis says in this is that he says, one refrain is common in the aftermath of almost every pastoral fall. How did I miss the signs? Okay. And then he says this, people who attend the church or worked there struggled to put their finger on it, but something felt off. Some, though, were able to anticipate these falls long before they happened, since they had categories to understand and identify kind of what was going on there. And so there's a few questions here that I think are helpful for us to think about. He says, here are five questions that should raise the red flag on an at-risk pastor.
That's right. So here's, again, the at-risk pastor. And you may have some of these qualities. Halleck, I got some of these qualities.
Oh, that's right.
So I'm looking in a mirror at these things,
right? Yeah, that's right.
We
that's
all
right.
do.
All of us.
Because we're all flawed. Either we're the narcissist who rises fast, everybody follows us, and we don't like to take no for an answer, or we're the narcissist who never rises and nobody follows us.
That's right.
And we become a victim.
That's right.
Or the no boundaries leader who just wants to please everybody and doesn't say no to anything. Or the floater who just tries to go along to get along. And as soon as it becomes hard, we're going to move someplace else. We're
that's
never
right.
going to do the hard work.
Yep.
So here are
there's five of
some
these.
Hints
that's
of how
right.
this might be you
yep.
and how to absolutely identify.
Yeah. Number one is, do they resist authority?
Yeah.
Do they resist authority? Why is that such a red flag in your mind?
Well, I think we're to be accountable to one another as in the Christ. And so I think in the New Testament always teaches about a plurality of leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Look, my ministries never really gained traction until I placed myself in a position where I was accountable to other men in my church. I don't mean like accountable in terms of a monthly business meeting. I mean like with my life.
Right.
I mean like with my pastoring ministry, with my preaching, with my spiritual walk, with all of those things. And if I resist authority in my life, others speaking into me, that is a huge red sign. Guys, if you just resist anybody, you can't handle it when people criticize you or someone suggests you should do something differently. If your first reaction is, that person's against me, he's my enemy, warning lights.
That's right.
Big time.
Yep.
Number one, do they resist authority? Do you resist authority?
Yeah,
number
that's
two.
Right. That's number two is, do they or do you resist critique?
Yeah.
Critique.
Or do you invite it?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
that's
there was a time when I resisted critique.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like people to tell me, Clifton, you yell too much when you preach.
Yeah.
Or, are you ready for this? This is totally honest. Clifton, you overpromise. You say you're going to do things and then you can't
don't
do them.
Through.
Or,
yeah.
Clifton, you're not returning your phone calls. You're not returning your texts.
Yeah.
You know, I used to resent that. And my feeling was, well, you don't know how busy I am. Or you don't know what my life is like.
Right, right.
Or you don't know good preaching if it walked across the room. I mean, how would you know what good preaching is? If you resist critique, that's a warning sign. And what you ought to do is invite it.
That's right.
Because let me tell you something. I think you told me this one time. I think maybe you said Spurgeon said this. If someone's going to critique you.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, we've all had those calls, right? Yeah. Where someone says, Pastor, I need to talk to you. I'm going to come by your office a week from Thursday.
Here we go.
We got 10 days to wonder about it.
I'm not in my belly for 10 days.
Right, yeah. It's like, well, could you tell me what it is? No, we'll just talk about it a week from Thursday. Oh, I hate that. Right? But here's what you told me one time. I think you said Spurgeon said it. Whatever they're going to accuse you of, you're actually much worse than
you're that. You're much worse. That's
you're much worse.
That's right.
And so whatever they're going to critique you of, you're much worse.
Just be prepared.
Be prepared.
Be prepared.
Because invite it.
Invite it. Listen, everything we do, we could do better. Mm-hmm. Everything in my life, I could do better. And if I truly believe that, I should be. There's a book that came out a few years ago called Unoffendable.
Okay.
And I just like the title. I haven't actually read the book, but I like the title. Because I want to be that kind of man. But I think if you have a right perspective on who you are and all the ways that, man, I don't have it all together.
Right.
When someone critiques you, typically you can just agree with them.
Right. You know, I'm like you. I don't read books. I just like titles. So,
by the way, your book has the best title.
Does it?
Reclaiming Glory.
That's true.
Quick plug: if you haven't read "Reclaiming Glory," you got to read that book.
But if you say it like you're quoting for text, text. You know, you do that when you talk to your phone.
Yeah.
It always comes up "Reclaiming Glory."
Really?
So I don't know why.
Okay. Anyway. Okay. Here we go.
So wait, we're talking about warning signs. All right. Do you resist authority? Do you resist critique? Number three: do you tend to work in isolation?
Ooh, yeah.
It's possible, as our writer says, to be completely surrounded by people and remain alone.
Mm.
A healthy person. Oh, this is so, man, this speaks to me. Man, Mark, this really cuts my heart. Because this is who I am. I'm just telling you, this is me.
Mm.
A healthy person opens his heart to others. Not to everyone, that would be unhealthy. But to a few trusted friends.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, Matt Chandler once said that if someone approached him saying they know a secret about him, his response would be, "You don't know anything about me that I know five men in my life who also know."
Yes. Yep.
That should be the goal of every pastor.
That's so good. So this is where it takes, again, humility, intentionality.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to pursue it. Because here's the truth. If you don't see this as a priority in your own life to protect yourself, nobody else will, right? I mean, one of the things he says is the easiest way to resist authority is to not have any. I would say the easiest way to resist accountability is not to have any.
I know.
Right? And so this is something that, again, as pastors, people look to you, pastor, you've got all the answers and you're great and you're all this. Listen, you know you. I know me.
And I was raised in a pastor's home, and I saw how people mistreated my parent. My dad never had a bad church in his life. They loved him to the end, every one of them. Never had to leave church, never got in trouble with his church, nothing like that. But just normal, healthy church people wear you down, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're full of life's full of problems and challenges. And I would see how that would wear on my parents, how they would be often broken over people, and people would just intrude in their lives. And so even though I'm in ministry, I build walls around myself.
Mm-hmm.
I like to be alone. And someone said, "Mark, you know, what do you crave?" Man, I crave isolation.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
At all. And I'm very likely to close off my life and my heart and everything to people. And I can walk around a room and smile and talk to people and shake their hands. But in my mind, you know what I'm thinking? I can't wait to get out of here.
Right.
I can't wait to be alone.
Right, right, right.
That's not Jesus.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? And I think that is a warning sign.
Well, and one of the things to encourage you, bro, is I know you fight that all the time.
I battle it.
And you battle it, and you're obedient to the Lord, and you push yourself. But here's what you can answer. For that type of personality, what happens if you don't fight it? In other words, you know what I'm saying?
Nothing good.
Nothing good.
Nothing good. By the way, God gave me a wonderful bride. Mm. I mean, when we're out with people, she just gives me this look that says, you need to look at these people and engage with them. Right?
Yeah.
It's just this look like, start talking to them, you know, or we'll be at church. And I think I've told you this before. I'm done preaching. I'm ready to go. And she keeps the keys to the truck in her purse. And I'll say, "You ready to go?" She said, "Nope, we're not leaving yet. We're going to talk to more people." Okay. She keeps the keys in her purse.
Okay, here we go.
But no, it is a warning sign. If you want to shut yourself off from people.
Yeah.
Because you think about it, Alec, Jesus needed to get alone and get away with the
Father.
Totally,
that's right.
But he never shut himself off from people.
No, that's
he
good.
He never shut himself off
that's
from
so
people.
That's so good.
Okay,
okay, listen, we got two more for this podcast, and then we're going to do a part two on this.
Right.
But number four is, do they see it or do you see it as your church? In other words, this is my church.
Yes.
There's an ownership that should not be there. This is the Lord's church.
I know.
This isn't my pulpit.
Right,
this is Jesus's pulpit.
In fact, I think, Pastor, let me encourage you to be careful about the personal pronoun when you're talking about the staff in your church.
My staff?
It is not your staff.
Dude, totally.
Please don't say that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me introduce you to my worship leader. Let me introduce you to my music director. Let me introduce you to my youth leader.
Yeah.
My Sunday school leadership, my deacons, my elders. No, 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 no.
Yeah.
They are, let me introduce you to our deacons, our elders, our staff. I'm so grateful for our church.
Yes.
It is not your church.
It's not your church.
Tell me about my church and my staff. I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Okay, number five, this will be our last one. Are they a young pastor leading a large church?
Well, I never had that problem. I don't know the suffering that goes with
that. Let me tell you, from your perspective, when you see a young, gifted guy take over as the lead pastor of a large church, what comes to your mind? Like, what do you think about when you see somebody on Facebook?
I'm thinking, when I my first church I pastored, the first one I planted, it grew to maybe 100. But dude, when we hit three digits, man, my head was big.
Yeah.
I thought I was I thought I was the next
check me out.
Yeah, I was it, man. I was gonna be there, dude. You know, it was there was no stopping me. You know, I had a real problem with pride in my life at age 23, 24. Mm-hmm. You know, planted a church, grew to 100, built a building.
Yep.
I can't begin to imagine if the church had gone to 1,000.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm just grateful it didn't. God would I'd probably be in ministry today. I think you're not prepared. You know, be very careful about this, guys. So, in the last 10 years, I'm 64 years old. When I was 55, nobody outside of Kansas City knew who I was. Mm. 55, right? Yeah. Never written a book.
Yeah.
Never had a podcast.
Yeah.
Never done anything. Oh, yeah, I pastored a church of about 150 people. That's it, which is great. I'm loving it. But in all honesty, God in his providence has opened up a lot of doors for me. I never thought the book would have as much a distribution as it has along a shelf life. Lifeway's republished it, written another book, got this podcast. I lead a team at the North American Mission Board of 14 people doing rural ministry and replanting and revitalization, and I get to meet all kinds of great people, and I've spoken at, and again, this sounds really, I'm just trying to make a point, but I've been blessed to speak at the Alabama Pastors Conference and the Georgia Pastors Conference and the Southern Baptist Pastors Conference at the SBC. Yeah. I never thought that would happen.
Right. Yeah.
If I'd have had that happen to me when I was 30,
oh man,
you couldn't have lived with me. But now that I'm 64, I have this understanding of what that really means. It doesn't. I'm glad I had the opportunity, but I'm not.
You're not impressed.
I'm not impressed with myself. Does that make sense at all?
Totally.
So
does.
I think when age does that to you,
And
I think it was a gift of God that I didn't have the platform I have until I was almost 60.
Yes.
Because I couldn't have handled it at 30.
That's right.
It's a danger to have. That's why if you have that experience at a younger age, you really need older men around you to feed into you. Listen, you've got to listen to criticism. We all know the younger men who've fallen, right?
Yep.
And it's almost the same reason.
Yeah.
They surround themselves with yes men. They begin to believe they're as great as they think they are. They believe what people say about them, and it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
It really is.
It is. Well, listen, this was great. So next podcast, we're going to continue this conversation. But thanks for tuning in, What do we need to tell these guys?
Please subscribe. Absolutely, we would love you to subscribe. Tell other people about it. Send it around to other friends. And this is a good one to listen to from time to time, just to make sure you don't have any of these at-risk traits in your ministry. Hey, we love you all very much. Check us out at churchreplanters.com, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.